Good morning,
everyone.
Good morning. Thank you for coming on this cold day. As usual, I have 4 pages of notes, and the reason I reminded Reverend Bill to do the declaration was to give myself an extra 30 seconds to agonize and try to decide which page I was going to pay attention to and which one I was going to skip over. But now I am here, and so I have to make a decision. And so I will start by doing what I said I was going to do last week, which is talk about the Theosophical Society. The Theosophical Society was formed at New York on the 17th of November in 1875. And they picked America because of the spiritualists. The woman whose idea it was to found the society was from Russia, Helen Blavatsky, and she came here and found an American man to help her actually get the society started. And they have 3 declared objects, kind of their declaration of principles, but they only have 3. The first is to form a nucleus of the universal brotherhood of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, caste, or color. Second, to encourage the study of comparative religion, philosophy, and science, kind of similar to the spiritualists. To investigate unexplained laws of nature and the powers latent in man. Obviously, they meant woman also, since it was a woman who was starting this whole thing, but this was quite some time ago, so the language was not as modern. So I visited their headquarters, which, even though they were founded in America and their headquarters in America is in Chicago, their international headquarters is in India. And so I visited their headquarters and bought a bunch of reading material in January of 2017 when I visited India. And toward the end of that trip, my mother fell and broke her skull, and I ended up having to come back early. And so all the stuff I bought on that trip kind of sat in a plastic bag on the floor of my bedroom for 2 years. And I got it out a couple of weeks ago, and I'm like, oh, I just started reading through all this stuff. And I'm like, universal brotherhood. I like that. You know, how do we go through our lives? How do we set our spiritual compass? Does our moral compass, do we care to align that with our spiritual compass? And what about our physical compass? In other words, how do our daily activities reinforce the ideals that we set from our spiritual theories and our moral theories? And that's always a struggle in the human condition, at least most of us, the vast majority of us. The human condition is difficult. Okay, there are a few people here who might disagree with me. Anybody want to say they want to disagree with me? Okay, I am relieved. So it is difficult, and part of what makes it so difficult is that we don't have universal brotherhood. We are always disagreeing with each other. So one of the things that I have tried to do is do what little I can to bridge the disagreements in our that our country and other countries are currently going through. I have a very wonderful neighbor. He comes and makes sure that my driveway is clear so that I can come to church or get to work. And he always tells me, well, I listen to all the whole range of the political spectrum. I listen to the left and the right. And then he said, he started telling me how he liked the John Birch Society. And he wanted to know, well, are they right or are they left? And I said, well, I'm pretty sure they're right. So we went to their website, and I was shocked to find myself agreeing with one of their statements, because I am usually not on the right side of the spectrum. So having this conversation with Wayne, I said, you know, forget about left and right. Who cares about left and right? What does that even mean? The real issue is, are we happy with human society the way it is? Or do we want to do something to improve it? And that is a question that faced the founding fathers. So when people say, oh, well, we're just going to conserve the great, wonderful America that was founded in 1776, it wasn't that great, wonderful America. There were already the seeds of disagreement that we are still fighting to this day. So I suggested that rather than left and right, maybe we want to think about, are we conservative? What does that mean? Well, when we conserve what the Constitution of this country enshrined, which was inequality. Or are we progressive? Do we want to improve things for all, the entire brotherhood of humanity? And is it just a mental preference? Or is it something we use to guide every part of our life? And one of the things that I think gets in the way of our many of us being able to use, as a matter of habit, our highest ideals of creating a fellowship of humanity is our negative thoughts about ourselves, our thoughts that we are sinners somehow. And even though we in this congregation believe in infinite intelligence, and we don't propagate this idea that humans are sinners, still we are in a Western country that has been influenced for thousands of years with this idea of the sinfulness of everybody in a body. That idea does not prevail in India. And one of my great heroes is Swami Vivekananda, who I have talked about before, but he went to Chicago to the World's Fair and the Parliament of the World Religions in 1893, and he said many times that his top priority was to preach unto mankind their divinity and how to make it manifest in every movement of life. So I really like that sentence. If you have to boil your life down to what's really important to you, I find that sentence very inspiring. Preach, he says he's going to preach. We need to be preached. We need to have our Western idea that we're sinful eradicated at so many layers. It's difficult to do that. We need constant reminders. And we need to be taught and given the opportunity to experiment in our own lives to figure out how to make our divine nature manifest. So it's not just a matter of words, it's a matter of actions. I do believe that most of us here are trying to make our divinity manifest. It's a long path to get to doing that every moment of your conscious life. In 1988, I took my first active step on my conscious, specifically spiritual path. I took a past life regression class. That was where I met the, sadly, in life's other room, Reverend Dan Kibble. Eventually, because of my friendship with him, I came to this church. And it was around the same time that I went to India for the first time in 2001. I went there to attend a retreat put on by an American guru named Andrew Cohen. He has since been discredited, but he had a large international organization called the Impersonal Enlightenment Fellowship, IEF. And he used to put out a magazine called What is Enlightenment, which I got then, and I liked the magazine. Overall, I really liked the magazine. It was very interesting and informative. But he was always going on and on about how you have to kill your ego. And I just always kind of had a problem with that, because for most of us, our egos are useful. We have to keep them in hand. We can't let them get carried away. But, you know, I just don't think it's good to kill our ego. I think the fact that so many people do kill their ego is why the few and the powerful become more and more powerful and keep the rest of us from expressing our divinity. So I decided to go on this retreat anyway, even though I didn't agree with his theory of killing the ego. And the retreat, it was a 3-week retreat. I stayed for about half of it and went off and did my own thing for about half of it. But there was one session where he had question and answer sessions. And that morning he had talked about how when he was a young man, he had a horrible fear that he was going to end up living a mediocre life. And that was what drove him to his spiritual path. And so I asked him. There were 300 people attending this retreat. And miraculously, he called on me. I raised my hand and he called on me. And so I said, in a very respectful voice, which is kind of hard for me to drum up, but I really was. I tried to have my most respectful voice. Was it your ego or your higher self that was deathly afraid of living a mediocre life? And the whole room erupted into laughter, which probably didn't impress him too much. But anyway, after the laughter died down, he answered. And he said, I don't know. Which was very interesting to me, because here he is in every one of his magazines writing, you know, 3 pages about how bad the ego is, and why isn't he giving his ego credit for making him miserable enough to take action? To me, that is one of the purposes of the ego, is to make us realize that we need to take action. And hopefully we will be aware enough of things going on outside the envelope of our skin that we are going to want to make things better, not just for our own selves, but for the entire brotherhood of humanity. There's another spiritual teacher that I, even though when I went to the Andrew Cohen retreat, I knew that I would never have a guru. First of all, I knew that no guru would ever accept me, and because I'm too stubborn, and so I just told God, look, God, you're stuck with me directly, and that's just the way it's going to be. But I did start to study the teachings of Osho, he was actually born in India, great teacher, and he has really given me great understanding and comfort over the years. And what Osho says is, don't kill your ego. You don't have to kill your ego. Your ego is necessary. Your ego is useful. But your ego needs to be your servant. Your higher self is the master. Your ego is the servant. And I guess after, I think I've had this epiphany in the last few weeks where I have realized that maybe all my years of spiritual practice have borne some fruit, because I do feel like my ego has become my servant. I do feel that I am using my pain, sorrow, depression, aggravation, annoyance to the best of my ability to do something useful with it for the brotherhood of humanity. Am I successful? No, I will never be successful. It's a big task. It takes all of us pushing in that direction. But time will tell. At the moment, I feel like rather than eliminate negativity, because that's just too hard for me, I will transform my negativity. So I like to remember that the personality is the tool of the ego. We all develop our personalities early in life, and they're pretty hard to change. We have a natural way that we tend to respond to life experiences. So as we continue to live our life in a body, we will have that ongoing struggle between the ego and our higher self. The teaching, to get back to my originally advertised topic, of the theosophist Annie Besant about how bad we should feel about our ego still being in charge to whatever degree it is we should chill out and not worry about it. Because all of us are eternal souls that come back again and again in new bodies with new learning opportunities. And so we should be gentle to ourselves, because we will be given another chance. And even as we struggle with karma, we should never think that our karma is a huge ton of bricks waiting to come down and crush us. We need to remember that even as we live every day, we have the chance to rebalance our karma. And every good action we take will modify whatever negative karma was coming to us. And I think that is such a helpful way to understand our lives here, and very similar to another teaching from a totally different place, the Yazidi religion. About 15 years ago, I heard about the Yazidi in an article in the Parabola magazine. And it was a story that when I got to the end, I just felt like somebody had punched me in the chest. It was so powerful. And sometimes you will hear about the Yazidi on the news. They are Kurdish ethnically. Originally, all the Kurdish people were Yazidi. The Kurds, by the way, are the ones that supposedly have been helping the Americans get rid of the bad guys in Syria, Turkey, etc., etc. But on the news, you will never hear about the traditional religion of the Kurds, the Yazidi. About a third of Kurds are still Yazidi, because the Yazidi worship Satan. And do you think the American government wants us to know that we are friends with the Satan worshipers? No, they do not. But we need to understand that the Yazidi worship Satan not like the dark religions here worship Satan to get power for their ego. No, that is not their teaching. Their teaching is worship Satan, worship the darkness, as an exercise in being kind to everybody. And what is the hard? Who is the hardest person to be kind to? Yourself. So if you can practice thinking loving thoughts to the worst people in our historical knowledge, Hitler, Pol Pot, Stalin, these bad guys, maybe see them as Satan, but realize that everybody needs love. Love is what helps everybody. Worship is a form of love. And when we say that we are working for the universal brotherhood of humanity, it includes the people that God has assigned the job of temporarily, at least, being the bad guys. They are doing God's work also. So, thank you for your attention, and hopefully I paid my dues online to this Theosophical Society a week ago, and I have heard absolutely nothing from them. They've been around for 145 years. You would think they would have their act together by now. They're supposedly, I think, 4,000 members in America. So hopefully I will hear from them. And be able to report to you more on their activities at a future time. Thank you.
Thank you again.